with the first pick.
And welcome back to another episode of the Daft on Draft podcast. I am your co-host, Devin Jackson, joined by Corey Kennan, who I got to meet in person and spend several days with at down in Indianapolis at the 2023 NFL Scouting Combine. And man, we have some great stories to tell, some great nuggets that we found out and just an overall great experience. But first, before we get into that, Corey, how you doing? I'm not going to lie to you. I'm struggling a little bit this week.
Dude, since Friday was my last night out in Indy, like Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, I've gotten pretty good sleep all 4 days and I'm dragging. Like, I'm still sluggish. Like, the schedule is like rigorous. People think that, I mean, the combine's fun. I think people are like, oh, media people go to the combine who is like drinking, hang out at bars at night, which is partially true. But like, I think there's a huge networking part of that. And like, we're in the media room to 11. We're like writing from like 11 to 1, and then it's time for testing, and then by 10:30 we're ready to get out and network more. But it's like the weirdest schedule where your break is like 8:30. Never seen anything like it. So yeah, I'm still a little struggling there, struggling a little bit here still.
Yeah, man. I got back early Monday morning, so. I know you left early over the weekend, but I stayed through the weekend and I went and saw the quarterbacks do their thing on Saturday, in the stadium. Sunday, dude, I stayed in the hotel room all day and just laid around. Cause like, that was a long week, like probably one of the longest weeks of my life, but man, we got to talk to some great people and great conversations and man, where to start? I don't even know where to start, but so I'm gonna kick it to you. What were a couple things that you know stood out to you during the combine week? Could be, you know, player talk. It could be bringing to media members. You know, what stood out to you?
Yeah, I think again, this was my first time as a media member at the combine, and I think you hear these stories of like, oh yeah, everybody talks at night. Everybody talks at night. This is where the deals get made. And I didn't hear a lot of that buzz. Like you hear some things, but it wasn't as like, oh, this player is getting traded this week, the way that it, like people made it seem. And maybe it was just quieter this year, but like there is just a pure culture shock to going to high velocity, going out. And the first night you're sitting there and you look right behind you and there's Jim Schwartz eating dinner with the son, or like you're out there a little bit too late. And then you're like wandering in the lobby and there's Sean Desai hanging out in the lobby. Like, that's just the kind of, like, the culture shock, I guess, aspect of it, where it's just like, oh, yeah, this is real. Like, these are real people. He's right there. I went up and said hi to Sean Desai. I talked to him about Vic Fangio's defense for, like, 30 seconds before he probably got annoyed with how drunk I was trying to babble about him, like, to him about a Fangio defense. But, like, that's all real. It's like, oh, this is cool. I was one of the nights standing with Trevor Sikkema and Owen Reese. And Jeff Risden, we were all standing just in a circle talking, and we hear this loud bang, and it happened right behind Trevor. We hear this loud bang, and we turn around, and the hostess stand, like the heavy metal hostess stand, got knocked over, and we turn around and look, and Sean Payton is just standing there, like this like shocked look on his face. Sean Payton knocked the sign over, and then tried to play it off like nothing happened. We're just like, what the hell just happened, man? It was really funny. But yeah, just like that kind of like shock value of it. Again, the combine itself was also really cool. Like it's a lot. That media room 8 a.m. in the morning is a lot, you know, rotating out 8 podiums every 20 minutes. And you try to catch as many players as you can and try not to get boxed out by big media trying to ask them the same questions. It's kind of a scrum, but it was a blast, man. And then, you know, once we got up to the actual media room where all the media members could write, that was like, oh, this is cool. Like we all sat together. We all debriefed a little bit. We all got our content written before it was time to get dinner or whatever. So it was just a long week, but like there are just so many things to take away. And it was such a good week.
Yeah, it was definitely a rewarding experience. And you mentioned Sean Payton. That was like the first big person I saw when I got to the combine, because I got there and you know, went to pick up my credential and I just see him walking past me, you know, past the media room on the phone, just talking it up. So it's like, That was like the first moment. And then obviously, a lot of other moments during the week, just getting to interview some of these guys. For me, getting asked Christian Gonzalez a couple questions, Broderick Jones, a lot of these big players that otherwise would not be attainable or reachable. And, they're right there at the podium. And we talked about this a little bit while we're there, asking them football questions and asking them like scheme questions and like skill set questions and seeing their face light up. It was kind of like they were there to talk ball, and you get to ask them a question about ball, and their reaction and their answer was always enlightening. So to me, that was probably the best part of it, like seeing how their face changed and how their body language changed when they got asked those football questions. And all this is like a negative aspect of it, watching the Jalen Carter news unfold like in person. That was pretty insane, just from kind of a media perspective, seeing how everyone was like looking at their phone, everyone was talking about it at the same time. Obviously people were waiting at the podium, although we already knew he wasn't gonna talk to the media when all that went down. But like being in that atmosphere and seeing things like that happen, like it's kind of surreal, because it's like, otherwise we've been sitting at home like tweeting about it or on Twitter, but we're like in the element like 15 minutes, 20 minutes before he was to talk. So that was a pretty crazy moment. I wouldn't say it was cool, but it was certainly crazy in terms of watching that. And then, getting to network with people. We got to talk to Dane Brugler of The Athletic, obviously one of the best draft guys out there. Connor Rogers, who both of us have talked to over the years, and I met down at the Senior Bowl, but we got to meet and hang out with him. So really, in general, man, it was a fantastic time, and I'm already looking forward to doing it next year. It was probably one of the best events I've been a part of, and the content that I was able to produce as well. And I'm sure you can relate to this, some of the best content that I've been able to put out. It's like in that environment where you're just like, it's almost like an outer body experience. It's like you're there, but like you're just like constantly on the go, trying to think of things on the go and writing things. But I feel like being in that environment and the same people, I thought it just raised that level of work. So man, it was a blast.
Yeah, man, it was a crazy, crazy, crazy week. Devin, if you had to tell me your top three favorite players that you talked to throughout the week, who would you say that was in the meeting room?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I'm gonna go with Broderick Jones as one of them, because I thought he was just really cool, laid back, and he just seemed to relish the opportunity. I thought it was really cool to see him kind of in that element, and how kind of, how great answers he gave. It wasn't just, I'm athletic, I'm big, but he really gave, insight on what he was able to do. And he even said that practicing against Nolan Smith and those guys were harder than the game, which was a crazy statement to make, but he was very serious about it. I would say Keanu Benton is another one. He was just an all around really good dude that really just took his time with how he answered questions, like the perspective he has being a Janesville guy that, really from his high school might be the first NFL player to play, come from his high school. So I thought that insight and how cool that was a really good interview. And then the last one I'll say probably Jalen Cropper from Fresno State. I think mostly because he's a guy that I've wanted to talk to for a number of months, and when I got to talk to him, he was just really cool, laid back, and just gave me some great answers, some great insight on what Fresno was able to do. Talked about the UCLA game being the best of his career. So I'm sure there are other guys that could have made that list, but those are top three for me. What about you, man?
Ooh, first day. So bright and early, the first day of the media room, 8 a.m. Adi Tamiwa, Adi Borare was at the podium, and I got there like pretty early, and I was able to get a front row seat, and able to get some questions in. And he's really well spoken, man. Again, he's from Northwestern, so you would expect him to be, you're pretty well spoken, pretty educated, pretty bright. But he is, man. He is unreal to talk to. And just asking him again some ball questions, like, how does your mindset shift when you're lined up at three tech compared to five tech, things like that. And he was really, really thorough with his answers, so I would say he's one for sure. Dude, I really like talking to Ketrell Clark, Louisville corner Ketrell Clark, man. I'm a big fan of his and on tape, and just to be able to pick his brain a little bit about the difference between playing in the nickel and outside, and kind of how he preps to fit the run from the nickel and some questions like that, man. He's a really good listen as well to just hear him talk about some of that stuff. And then my guy, Tyler Scott, man, Tyler Scott might've been the bubbliest dude at the combine. Just like was really happy to be there. Was just like high energy the whole time he was at the podium. Just a really fun dude to talk to, really just soaking it all in. So I would say those three were my favorite three. Again, man, Josh Downs is right there though too. Like I got a couple questions into Josh Downs. He was really well spoken, really broke it down for me. Like it's really hard to pick three because again, there were so many people. Jamie Robinson was good, but I'll stick to those three and say Eddie Bouare, Keytrell Clark, and Tyler Scott.
Yeah, those are some great options. I talked to Adebore at the Senior Bowl, and he was a great interview, and a guy that obviously very cerebral, very smart player, and blew up the combine as well. So, man, we could talk about this. We could do a whole episode on just our experience down at the combine. But as we mentioned before the combine, and obviously we didn't get a chance to record while we were down there, we're going to get back into our rankings. And today we got interior offensive linemen. And we talked about this before we start recording. This is not a incredibly deep class of interior offensive linemen. And I think there's a big drop off after, maybe the first guy or two on our respective lists. Just because, like, athletic wise, I don't think there's a good bit of these guys that, are not exactly the most fluid movers. They're not guys that are testing off the charts, and they're also not guys that I think are incredibly scheme versatile. But I think it's always good to talk interior offensive linemen. We've done tackles already. Now we hit the interior guys, and why don't you get us started off, Corey, with your number five guy?
Yeah, I mean, I hated this class too. I hated this class. Like, and there's like some dudes who are getting top 50 hype, and I think it's probably because the class as a whole is pretty bad. But like, watching something, just like, man, that's a late day two, early day three guy. Like, I don't know what we're saying. And I guess a good way to start with that is talking about my number five guy, who I think, again, I have him late day two, early day three, that comp pick kind of range pick. And that's Steve Avila from TCU, man. And some people really love his tape. And I thought he had a really good Senior Bowl. Again, he's really strong, really dense. He's got a really good anchor. But like athletically, man, I don't. I thought he struggled to move on tape, really struggled to change directions. I thought he'd get out over his waist a little bit. He's got strong hands. But again, I watched the Georgia game and the Michigan game, national semifinals and the finals game. And Mozzie Smith, man, Mozzie Smith got into his chest a lot, bullied him quite a bit in that game. So I think he's a high floor player, and I think the foundation is there for him to probably play early as a guard, but I don't think his ceiling is very high at all. And I think he's not going to be going to a system that's going to ask him to get to the boundary, that's going to ask him to get wide in a wide zone. Like, that's just not going to be his game. And so I think Steve Avila is a pretty limited player, even if that foundation is pretty firm coming into the league.
Yeah, we'll talk about Vila in a little bit from me, but yeah, I echoed those same concerns, and it's like it's really tough because like you go from these positions, like you look at tackle, you look at some of, even defensive line and edge, like there are dudes that are moving at a freakish level and able to showcase their quickness and whatnot, and Vila is like a really good rock solid player, but like he's athletically limited, and we're going to run into a lot of that, I think, with just this class in general. And that brings me to my number five guy, and that's John Michael Smits from Minnesota. And I know he's a, and we talked a little bit about this beforehand, he's a guy that didn't make your list, but for me, like, I see the allure. I see why people like him. Like he's a to me, feels like a zone fit center. Like he can climb up to the second level. A guy that really excels at like hitting the hip and like displacing defense alignment on the move. You see him like constantly keeping his head on swivel as well in pass protection. But when it comes to athletically wise and even his arm length, it certainly limits him and what he can do. Because like a lot of the times he's like falling off of blocks even when he gets to that second level. You know, he's a little bit out of position in terms of trying to cut dudes off. Like the angles aren't always sharp when he's trying to you know, get to the backside or front side back backer. You even think about like what he was able to do at the Senior Bowl. He looked like a much improved player, like a guy that's had active hands, a guy that reset his hands at the point of attack. But inconsistency on tape with that. Like there were times where when Keanu Benton got hip to hip with him, he couldn't recover. He couldn't get back and anchor. And I thought his anchor was a little soft, especially at the point of attack against teams like Wisconsin, Illinois. They were just a little bit too much for me of him being on the ground and ending up on the ground. I thought he was a guy, you know, the way that he's talked about and like the pedigree around him, like you would think he's a guy that's constantly moving dudes at the point of attack, that's resetting those hands, that looks good with his footwork. But to me, I think there were too many times, too many lapses of that happening. I thought his best game was probably the Penn State game that I got to watch, and he did a really nice job of working up to the linebackers, still in double teams, and like getting to the spot and beating dudes to the spot. But like, it's inconsistent from game to game for me. So that's why I ended up number five for me. And I just wish there was a little bit more consistency there with his game and how it translates to NFL level. And I think he's probably more of a center. I don't see him as a scheme versatile guy where you can throw him at guard. I think he probably plays center at the next level. And probably is a, I would say a average to slightly above average starter, but I don't think you're getting more of a high floor guy versus a high ceiling guy, in my opinion.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. I don't have John Michael Schmitz in my top five for some of those same reasons. And again, like Illinois defensive lineman, like Johnny Newton, Keith Randolph, like we're going to be talking about those guys next year. Like there's no way around it. Like Illinois' defense was really good, and that defensive front is really good, but I just don't think he handles power well. Like Randolph, the number 88 for Illinois, has really heavy hands, like really heavy hands. And when he would disengage with John Michael Schmitz and hit him with a punch, like the visceral shock from John Michael Schmitz was evident. And again, I do think he's his own fit, but I don't think he's as athletic as we thought he was. And I think that kind of shows on tape. Like he can get to the boundary, but he doesn't get there quick. I think there's a little stiffness shown in getting there. So he's a tough eval again, because he did have probably one of the better senior roles of anybody in Mobile. So it's hard to reconcile game tape with the Senior Bowl. And again, what the Senior Bowl should really do is say, hey, I need to go back to the tape. But the tape didn't really change for me based on a Senior Bowl. Testing kind of confirmed what I thought based on his athletic ability. So he's a weird eval. But going to number four for me now, that's going to be Luke Whipler, the center out of Ohio State. And again, we didn't break up centers and guards. We're just doing interior offensive linemen. So I think Whipler is all around solid. I don't think there's a deficiency in Whipler's game. I don't think there's a trait that stands out in Whipler's game, though, either. So again, he's got pretty good mobility to get to the boundary, but he's not going to blow you away with his athleticism. He's got a pretty solid anchor when he drops, when he sinks his hips and when he digs in his heels. But I don't think his play strength is going to wow anybody. In the run game, he's not a people mover. You know, he's pretty adept at framing off rush lanes, but he's not going to bow people over. I don't think he has that same mean streak that some of these other guys do. But again, he's trustworthy. I think I love his eyes. His eyes are excellent in pass pro. And he's just all around solid. Again, he's not going to blow you away. Doesn't have a trait that really pops, that really stands out. But he just reeks of one of those guys that like 9, 8, 9, 10 years into their career, and they're like, oh, yeah, that guy's still playing. That guy's still starting for so-and-so. Like, I think maybe Dennis Allen of the Rams is a good comparison to make, and maybe not as a play style, but like, oh yeah, Dennis Allen started for the Rams for quite a while. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, so I think that's the kind of player Whipler is, just sturdy, solid all around, not a deficiency in his game, but not like any wild traits in his game.
Yeah. I'm kind of the same point of view as well. And I thought he did a really nice job. Like, he's not like a crazy athlete, but I thought he did a nice job, like of like you said, framing those blocks, especially at the second level. And he understood angles. I think that was a big thing I wrote down is like, he understands where to get to and how to get to there, with the, of the path of least resistance. And I think that's valuable, in an interior offensive lineman. Like, you know that you are not going to, you know, wow people athletically. You're not going to, you know, run and beat dudes to the spot. So you have to be smart about how you frame it up. And he's a little bit higher on my list, but, really overall solid player. Steve Avila is number four for me. And some of the same things that you mentioned, I thought he's a, like a rock solid player, very strong dude. You know, you rarely see him get, out muscle at the point of attack, although Mazi Smith was able to move him around a little bit, but I thought he looked really good in double team blocks and, is one-on-one situations where he didn't have to go too outside of frame, and go against some of those more athletic, you know, defensive tackles. But I think, you know, kind of the same issue with John Michael Schmitz is that, you know, he's just not a athletically gifted dude. Like, he, everything about him is about timing and being, you know, very cerebral with his movements. I thought his pad level was a little high at times too. Especially going against those more powerful dudes. And I thought, you know, he did a solid job of replacing hands, but wasn't consistent. I thought he had a really nice initial strike, especially at the point of attack, but the tendency to fall off a little bit was showing up on tape. And I think he's just a guy that more, I feel like he's more of a, I don't want to say utility guy, but a guy that's a little bit, you can move around a little bit. Like, you can play him at guard, you could probably play him at center. And I think that gives him a little bit more positional flexibility, in terms of how it relates to the NFL game. So that's why I ended up at number four for me. I think the positional versatility plus him being just a really rock solid player, someone that can absorb contact and move dudes at the point of attack in the run game. I think that made him a little bit higher for me, at four. But I think the athletic limitations are going to probably make him, I would say, in that third, fourth round area is where I value him at.
Yeah, again, this like he's getting a lot of second round hype, and I don't see it, man. I think again, it's a product of a subpar class overall. But I mean, especially after the Senior Bowl, and again, I thought he had a really good Senior Bowl, but second round is really steep. But yeah, that 3-4 range, we're on the same page there. Who do you got at number three, Devin?
Yeah, Whipler is number three for me. Just because, like, you know, when you stack these guys up, and I know I'll full disclosure, I haven't watched one of the guys on your list, but the separation wasn't extreme there. It was like, okay, like, who is the dude that, you know, has a good combination of like some athleticism, but showing the ability to still get to where he needs to be on tape and just in certain schemes. And Whipler fits that for me. He's not a guy to me that's going to wow you. He's not going to show you anything spectacular, but he's just a really good football player that understands angles, that understands how to beat dudes at the point of attack, and be savvy with it. I think he's not going to be a, you know, like a guy that's going to create large holes behind him. But I think he's going to do just enough to create a lane and allow the running back to make some decisions. And he's shown some ability to work up to the second level. And like I mentioned earlier, work those angles. I thought his hands were pretty good. He did some nice things resetting his hands, especially like when he was getting bull rushed a little bit. But I do think, you know, he got a little bit, you know, against like the Keanu Bentons and some of the more athletic, and he had a solid game against Georgia. I thought that was his best overall game in terms of just being able to handle what Georgia was throwing at him. You know, some of the blitzers that they brought to, and he was able to locate and pick it up. And his eyes, I think, work really well scanning, you know, from right to left. So I really like those things about his game. And I thought that made him number three for me, and a really rock solid player that, like you mentioned, I think he's going to be around the league for quite a bit.
Yeah, man. I've been talking about Whipler since, you know, him and CJ Stroud started every game together. Well, CJ Stroud missed one game with injury his first year as a starter, but they came in together and they left together. And I think, you know, there's an obvious like maturity rapport between the two, both really smart players, when it comes to setting protections, when it comes to calling out Mike. It's kind of cool to see them go in together, go out together. And again, I think we've talked about Whipler, but I think both those guys are going to be in the NFL for a decade plus, and we're like, yeah, rock solid players. My number three is also center, and the difference between my three and my two is razor thin, like razor thin. But for me, at three, I have Wisconsin center Joe Tippmann. Man, I like Joe Tippmann a lot. I like Tippmann a lot. Again, he was another one of the guys at the combine that was really fun to talk to. Just a really high IQ, very smart player, really cerebral player to hear him break down kind of a process, pre-snap, post-snap, kind of what he's going through. And everything he's saying, like, I was like, oh, yeah, I saw that on tape. Like, there's a rep against Ohio State where, you know, he sets protections. And Ohio State brings up a late backer in the A gap. And just to see him pick up that mug look and not panic. And then that backer ended up dropping out as well. So for him to keep his eyes moving left to right, back to right, back to left, and just find work, stay calm, didn't get over here to throw his hands at anything that came near him. Just a really high IQ player. And not only that, but he's really athletic, man. Like, that dude can move. He gets to the boundary really well with ease. He climbs, takes good angles to the second level, and he's got a mean streak to his game. So if he gets into your chest, he's going to look to bury you. He's going to look to bury you. So, again, I don't know if the physical play strength necessarily matches that mean streak all the time. So I do think he can be a little soft in the run game at time, but the motor's there and that streak is there to say, you know what, I might not be the strongest, but I'm still going to give it to you. And he's 6'6", man. That's a big dude. That's a tall dude to try to win leverage inside. So, but Tippmann's got some traits that really are eye popping. Again, his mobility, his ability to climb, get to the boundary, really move really well. That mean streak and his high IQ really sets him apart. Again, I think his feet can be cleaned up. I think his anchor could be a little bit better. But I think those traits are there for me to say, yeah, I see it, man. This guy, I can see why this guy could go in the second round.
Yeah, he's my number two guy, and I'll go right into him. I think he was the most fun watch, I think, of the five guys I have on this list, even including the number one guy, because like he was pulling out on the perimeter, like, you know, this is like insane stuff. Like, this is the stuff that we loved about, you know, I believe it was Creed Humphrey and what he was able to do at Oklahoma. Like that, you know, that pin and pull action he was able to do, you know, even blocking back on power. I love his fit in potentially like pulling out in front of the, you know, in front of the running back and making plays that way. I would love that use of his athleticism. And I got to ask him about that 6'6" high. Like, how do you sink your hips at that height? You know, like at center, like you're snapping the ball and then you got to get really low to match some of these dudes. And he did a good job. He talked about Keanu facing Keanu Benn in practice being a part of that development. But yeah, I echo the same things that I like about him. His ability to ID, you know, blitzes and twists. I thought he did a really nice job doing that. It seemed like he was almost anticipating, while some of these other guys, a little bit lower on the list, I thought were a second low or a couple seconds low, recognizing it. And just his ability to frame up blocks, get to the second level, and really just help everyone in pass protection. It was impressive the amount of dudes that he just threw out of the club, just from scanning the entire field, looking left to right, and just really, you know, kind of being there for his teammates. So that was the big thing that stuck out to me, him setting protections, recognizing blitzes, and finding work. I thought that was one of the big things I wrote down, is like, I want a lineman that finds someone and knocks him over and has that mean streak. So that mean streak is there. I thought the anchor needed a little bit work too. And just, I think, you know, just bulking up a little bit more mass in his lower half to be a little bit stronger at the point of attack. But the foundation is there, the traits are there, and he ended up as my number two guy.
Yeah, no complaints there at all. I think he's going to be a really solid player. I liked him more than I liked Cam Jurgens last year, and Cam Jurgens went in the second round last year. So, yeah, he's one that I'd be tempted at 42 with the Browns to say, ooh, if he's there. And I know they need weapons at receiver, and they need some help inside on it defensively, but he's a talented player with a pretty freaking high ceiling. So he's not 100% polished, not 100% there yet, but man, the traits are there. Moving on to my number two, and Devin, this is the guy that you said you haven't had a chance to get around to yet, but I was surprised at how much I liked Cody Mock's tape from North Dakota State. Again, he's a tackle that's going to play guard at the next level. So you have to translate a little bit. You have to put some perspective into it a little bit. And again, I didn't think his feet. This is again where I start to say, like, man, we're overhyping this class a little bit. I think, you know, he's in a lot of people's top 30s, a lot of people's top 40s, and you know, I'll probably have him somewhere around, probably around 45-ish, and that's probably the earliest I would take him. But like, I've seen some. I guess that's mid-second round, so I guess I'm there with consensus. Now that I think about it, but I don't think this guy's a first round player. I don't think he's a top 40 player. But he's sturdy. In the run game, he is a dude who will displace defenders out of gaps on the run game. He will get after it in the run game. Again, 6'5", a little bit shorter arms, and that shows at tackle when edge defenders are getting into his chest a little bit. He struggles to displace hands and win back inside position. But again, he's going to play guard at the next level. So I mean, a guy's like, sure, Keanu Benton's got 34-inch arms, but I think for the most part that issue won't be as evident as it is on tape when he's playing left tackle for the Bison. But again, really strong mover, gets to the boundary super well, climbs, that takes nice angles to the second level, looks for work, man, always looks for work. But I do worry a little bit about the leap from level competition from the FCS level to NFL, and not in like the cliche way of like, oh, that's just a big leap in level of competition, but like, I think his eyes are a little bit slow to go from one to two when he doesn't get work right off the snap. I think pre-snap, his eyes are a little rough getting his eyes to the right spot off the ball. In the run game, he kind of dips his eyes a little bit, trying to make contact and kind of gets out over himself. Again, in pass pro, I think his base is solid. I think he's not a waistbender. I think he's pretty solid in that regard. But so I do think the transition to the NFL level might be a little steep for him. Just because I think there are some issues with his eyes that I see both pre and post snap. But again, athletic, physical, red hot motor, not just to match his hair color. And so I was shocked at how much I like Mock's tape. And again, he tested athletic, like pretty athletic as well. So, there's a lot to like there with Cody Mock, even if he is a sixth year guy, even if he is 24.
Yeah, I'm very excited to watch him. Got to see him at the Senior Bowl, and he really popped and did some really nice things while he was moving all over the place. He played almost every position on the offensive line while he was down at the Senior Bowl, and that even included the game. They put him at like left tackle, right tackle, at guard. So he's a guy that's coming in with you know, an open mind to play anywhere, and I'm very excited to get to evaluate him and see him, and just surely will crack or shake up my interior offensive lineman rankings. But number one guy, man, and I think it's not really close in terms of the next guy down. Like, I know you talked about liking Mock, but Osiris Torrence, dude, he was far and away the best interior offensive lineman. And that's if you consider, you know, depends on where you consider Pierre Skoronski. If you think he's entire interior offensive lineman, obviously Skoronski would be one, but for our purposes, I believe we both evaluated Skoronski as a tackle. So Torrence is one from Florida. Man, dude is a beast. Just really, really, really good player. His ability to move dudes at the point of attack and you know, just be a bully in the trenches. You know, really shut dudes down with his strong first punch. It was an easy eval to watch and get, you know, get done, because, you know, clearly he's the best interior, pure interior offensive lineman in this class. What he was able to do at Florida this year, moving bodies, holding up in pass protection. Didn't have the best day against Jalen Carter, but had some nice reps against him 1-on-1, and was able to get him a few times. Just a really good player, man. I really had no complaints about his game. I thought, you know, he could be a little bit better in terms of his anchor. I think sometimes he plays a little high and just kind of relies on that power to win in those 1-on-1 reps. But overall, I thought he was a really, really easy, clean eval. A guy to me that's probably in that late first round, early second round range, really depending on where you go. My favorite fit is the Giants. I think they should draft him and not even think twice about it, especially if he's on the board at 25. But Torrence was really good and just such a clean eval, you know, for Florida, and just such a big dude. I mean, we saw him at the combine, massive dude who has a great personality, very cerebral guy too. good to hear some of his quotes while he was at the podium. But man, he was really impressive in person, and then, you know, just on this tape, there were really no complaints for me.
Yeah, man, he's a brick shit house. That dude is rock solid. He's a big dude, and he's cut weight. Like he was huge at Louisiana, huge, and he was huge again this year at Florida. But like his weight, I need to check this now. Let me pull up some cats and spreadsheets real fast. I want to see how much he weighed at the Senior Bowl versus how much he weighed at the Combine. I just want to check the difference there real fast and see what the difference was. But again, man, you hit it. He is just rock solid. Again, he doesn't move well, but again, he's getting drafted into a phone booth scheme, you know, a team that's going to run spread and just ask him to pass that a lot, like Kansas City. Kansas City's the big one that sticks out. That's going to be fine. I think he'll be fine in that. But again, he's heavy, heavy hands, man. Heavy hands. To really displace dudes, knock them back on their heels, dig them out, man. He's unbelievable. And I think he's a little top heavy still. Still a little top heavy. Can get out over his waist a little bit. He lost 7 pounds from Mobile to the Combine, by the way. So in about a month, he lost 7 pounds. So he's clearly trying to.
That's pretty impressive.
yeah. He's clearly still working on his body. Which is pretty scary. Upper body strength, lower body strength, though, is all there. Rock solid, best anchor in the class, best heaviest hands in the class of any interior offensive lineman, maybe heaviest hands of any offensive lineman at all, like in this class, like just a really physical player. And he got better. He transferred up and got better. Like that's not easy to do, man. That's not an easy thing to do from Louisiana to the SEC and playing as well as he did. You mentioned the Giants. I tend to mock him to the Jaguars a lot, the spot right before the Giants, because the Jaguars roster is pretty freaking well-rounded, man. Like, I don't know if you've looked at it, but they're a hard team to mock because, like, they don't really have a hole. I guess corner, they just cut Shaq Griffin, so you could go corner if you wanted, but, like, that's a pretty good team. So I tend to send Osiris Torrance that way. Seahawks make a lot of sense, too. But I don't see how he gets out of the first round. I think in maybe a stronger year, yeah, this dude's probably a mid-second round pick. But we're, again, teams have to draft the players that are on the board. And in this class, this guy's probably a late first round pick.
Yeah, I don't think he should get out of the first round. If he does, someone's running that card in as soon as the second round starts. It's almost like a Logan Hall situation where everyone knew the Bucks were taking Logan Hall, you know, the next day, but it was just a matter of time. They can run the card in. So if he somehow gets out of the first round, you know, I think he's going to be easy off the board within the first two, three picks of the second round. But yeah, Torrance is great, man. And really, I think if he's not in this class, like, when does the first one come off the board? Like, he might be like mid, maybe late second round, early third round. I mean, you could wait quite a bit. Before, even between Torrance and the next guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, I tend to think Mock or Tittman will be the second guy. Depends. You know, there's some teams who really value age over pure tape. Some of those analytical front offices. And I get that argument. And I would probably take Tittman over Mock just for ceiling purposes. But like, yeah, you'd be waiting probably 40, maybe one of the top 50 of Torrance's in this class. And it would be way close to 50. So, yeah, man, Torrance is rock solid
for sure. And just to recap, for me, my top five: John Michael Smith's at five, Steve Avila at four, at three, was Luke Whipler, at two was, I don't know, I just drew a blank, but number two was Joe Tippmann, and then number one was Osiris Torrance. What about you, Corey?
Yeah, so for me, I had Steve Avila at five. With probably a late third on him. Whipler at four, Tittman at three, Mock at two, Torrance at one.
So there you have interior offensive line. And we talked about, you know, it's kind of, I won't say it's cut and dry, but the class just isn't, you know, compared to some of these positions, like, you know, like DB and edge and you know, the receiver position, although it's more deep than top heavy. I think this group here, It's not going to be, it's going to be more probably day two and day three guys than anything for this particular class. And I just really think it's about where you see these guys in terms of where they fit and how they fit on your NFL team. But you never know. Maybe there's going to be a few guys that are slated at tackle that dudes might move to guard as well. So that'll be something to watch, obviously, as it translates to the NFL level. But that's all we got for this episode of the Daft on Draft podcast. You can follow me on Twitter at RealD underscore Jackson. Follow Corey on Twitter at RealCoreyKinnon. And make sure to check out Homage on the Substack site. We still have a partnership with Homage, so make sure to use the link on the Substack website to get your sports gear and get all that you need. Anything else you want to add, Corey?
No, man, again, we're doing mailbag as well. If you leave a rate and review on Apple Podcasts and you put your question in the review, we'll answer it on the pod. It's been a couple of weeks since we've had one, but again, we're still doing that. We'll always do that. So, yeah, that's all I got, man. Again, we're running out of positions. I think we got linebackers, running backs, and quarterbacks. I think that's it. So we're working through this.
Yeah, for sure. Looking forward to the next position we get to, because it certainly will be, I will say, a little bit deeper at that position than the interior offensive lineman. But until next time, make sure to subscribe to the podcast and leave your comments and questions that you may have. But until next time, we'll see you guys later.